So we're going to go till 6 o'clock. It's 4:38. I want to continue reading from the paper on the principles, so get your papers out. We're going to begin reading from posture, because we've actually covered the last two. So on the second page in the middle, it says posture.
The
cinnamon? You have the cinnamon? Shastra says, a crooked body creates a crooked mind. Your physiology affects your psychology. Prabhupada remarked during japa, sit properly. If you sit straight, it helps you concentrate. Your psychology also affects your physiology. If you are not sitting straight, it is often a sign that you're getting lazy about your chanting, or you are not trying as hard as you could and should. So, Prabhu's and Mataji's, when you chant japa, sit straight, don't lounge against a wall. And if you find yourself lounging against a wall or overly relaxing while you're chanting, it probably means you're relaxing your effort. Right?
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Ever see anybody chant like this? Ever seen yourself chant like this?
Yes.
After a hard day at work, you come back to home. Hare Krishna, I'm so tired. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. I forgot my phone. This posture goes good with the phone. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Right? You guys do that? What's the 11th offense to the holy name? Have your cell phone on while you're chanting. What's the 12th offense? Have Facebook open while you're chanting. Let's go to Aparad, Namavas, and Shudhanam. Aparad produces no spiritual benefit. Namavas removes anarthas. Shudhanam gives love of Krishna. The bridge from anartha to Shudhanam is Namavas. We enter the bridge through the door of effort, specifically the effort to avoid the 10 offenses. Nam aparad is defined as chanting without making the effort to avoid the 10 offenses. Do you know how important effort is? Without effort to avoid the offenses, we remain on the aparat stage. When we make the effort to avoid the offenses, we come to the namabhas stage. Now I have to tell you something important. Are you ready to hear this? First, I'll drink something before. It's so important I have to drink something first, so I can say it properly. Leo. Every one of us wants mercy. Every one of us wants mercy, right? How do you get mercy? Who knows? You lay in your bed and pray for mercy, and when you get it, you get up. Is that how it works? How do you get mercy?
Asking for mercy. Asking for mercy.
Asking what?
Give her a microphone.
God, have to scream or we'll give you a microphone. We'll give you a microphone. What did you say?
Effort.
Effort. He said effort. Wow. He's smart. What did you say? Serving. Serving the what?
Pure
devotees. So, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, it's virtually impossible to get Krishna's mercy unless you, who knows what he said? Unless you what? Make your best efforts in devotional service. So everybody wants mercy, right? But is everybody willing to make the effort required to get it? Many of us think that mercy is not a result of effort. Mercy is a gift. You show up at the right time in the right place and you get mercy. Right? You walk in the temple, someone throws a garland. Mercy. Somebody gives you maha, somebody gives you tulsi. It's all mercy. You didn't do anything. You just showed up in the temple. You get all this mercy. But the mercy we need to advance is different. The deeper mercy, or greater mercy. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says you get it by effort. Which seems like a contradiction, doesn't it? By effort I get mercy. I thought mercy was free. Now I have to pay for it. You make a little effort and you get a lot of mercy. So it is free. But you at least have to put your hand up. Right? Prabhupada used to give out cookies. You've seen pictures of Prabhupada giving out cookies. Who got the cookies? The people who put their hand up. Right? If you were in the back of the temple, you didn't get the cookie. So at least you had to come up and put your hand up. You have to do something. So we make a little effort and we get a lot of mercy. Much more mercy than the effort we put into it. But there has to be effort. And so effort distinguishes offensive chanting from namabhas, or the clearing stage. And you can't get onto the bridge of namabhas if you don't make the effort. And one of the challenges we all face is that often we chant our rounds and we don't make sufficient effort. You will notice that any time you say, well, I'm not chanting well because, there may be so many becauses, but underlying all of the becauses generally is that we're not making the proper effort. And that's a huge problem. Lack of effort comes from apathy. Apathy is a division of inattention. We just don't care. So when we come to the point where we don't care, we don't make the effort. We only make effort for things we care about. And that is why I spent the whole first session stressing the importance of the value of Krishna's name, the value of this gift. So we would realize it's worth making the effort. A lot of times, devotees ask Prabhupada, can he make the process easier? It's too difficult. Did you know that? Devotees ask Prabhupada, can't you make it any easier? And what did Prabhupada say? I've already made it easy. If I make it any easier, there is no process anymore. These are hippies who used to take drugs to get spiritual experiences. So they're saying, can you make it easier? Can't you just put the Maha Mantra in a pill? I take it, I get love with God. Go back to God, and all business is over. And that's the mentality, right? Every devotee I speak to wants love of Krishna. But every devotee I speak to is not willing to do what is necessary to get it. Yes or yes? That's a problem, isn't it? Do you want 10 crore rupee? Of course I do. You ready to work for it? No way. I want you to give it to me. That's our disease. We're not going to get it without the effort. How does Krishna know where to give his mercy? The same way Prabhupada knew where to give the cookie to the hand that was there. We have to put our hand out. When we show Krishna we're making the effort to chant properly, he reciprocates. Sometimes he doesn't make it easy. You chant, 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 try, try, try. Maybe you're not getting what you wanted. And then you think, I might as well give up. But we've learned that when we're trying, 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 and it seems that Krishna's not there, he is there and he's watching. And he's thinking, what is my devotee going to do next? Are they going to give up? Or are they going to continue? And so we continue, effort, trying, effort, effort. And the Krishna says, okay, here's the mercy. That's how it works. And by that mercy we advance. What did we say last night? The only people who fail are the ones who give up. If we keep trying in Krishna's service, we cannot fail. It's impossible. If you try and we execute the process properly, we cannot fail. It is impossible. Guaranteed success. And what is our success? Our success is the effort. If Prabhupada's movement did not spread, would he have been successful? Yes. Because he executed the order of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. He got on the boat, he came to New York, and he made the effort. If nothing happened, he would have been a grand success. Right? It's not that he achieved what he achieved in ISKCON that made him successful. But as soon as he got on that boat, as soon as he made the determination to do it, he was successful. Not to speak of getting on the boat. He didn't need any result. But he always told us that if you do this, you will be successful by Krishna's grace, beyond your imagination. So effort is essential. Everything we're learning here today, everything you learned in level one, requires effort to apply. And as life hits you, one of the reactions when life hits you is to give up your effort. It's too hard. There's too much going on. It's too difficult. We retreat from the battle. That ever happened to you? It's kind of retreat, just kind of give up. It's too hard, too much going on, I can't do this. I'll wait till my kids grow up and I have Vanaprast, then I'll do it. I can't do it now. It's too hard. Or I'm too passionate, or I'm not passionate enough, or I'm too this, or not enough that. I can't do it. It's too hard. effort always has to accompany everything we do in Krishna consciousness. You know what Prabhupada said in 1976 when his health was failing and the devotees said, Prabhupada, why don't you go to the farm, Gita Nagari, the farm, and rest? And Prabhupada said, no. I want the privilege of fighting for Krishna to my last breath. But that was Prabhupada's attitude. Keep going, going, going. Despite all obstacles, keep going, going, going. So, one of the biggest problems devotees face is when there is an obstacle, particularly in the form of material desire or lack of enthusiasm, the devotee identifies with that anartha and thinks, I am that anartha. And that's a very discouraging thought, isn't it? I am that lust, I am that envy, I am that jealousy, I am that greed. And then we become discouraged because we think that's who we are. And if that's who we are, what is the use of going on? Because it keeps coming up again and again and again. Right? Very discouraging. I'm trying to chant, I'm trying to do my service, and then Mr. Lust hits me in the face, or Mr. Greed hits me, or Mrs. Envy hits me. Again, I thought I was over it. I thought I'd given it up. And again, they're coming to visit me at the front door to allure me out into the material world. It's frustrating, isn't it? Just feel like giving up. What's the use? The attitude of a devotee is, I will continue in Krishna consciousness no matter how many material desires and contaminations are hitting me in the face. I will tolerate all of them. Why does a devotee think like that? Because, as we said last night, or this morning, or both, he's got his eye on his goal, which is good. I want to chant good japa. I don't care if all these conditioned desires are affecting me. I'm going to keep marching because my goal is to become pure. So he doesn't become discouraged. He tolerates. That's the key. Don't become discouraged by those material desires or contaminations. Just tolerate and continue marching forward. That is absolutely required. If we don't do that, we're going to become discouraged. We're going to be full of, yeah, but. I tried, but. It was good for a while, but. Everybody knows you can't really do this. And then we're back where we started from. And then we have to come back and take another body and attend another japa workshop in the next lifetime. And hope that the japa workshops are as good as this one. Or if they even exist. So it's very, very important that we understand material desire and material attachment are natural for the conditioned soul, for every one of us. We all have them. The key is to continue in spite of them, to not allow yourself to be discouraged by them, to tolerate them, to accept, okay, this is my samskar from the past life. This is how I think, this is how I feel, this is how I relate, but I'm not going to fall prey to it. I'm going to continue. I'm going to tolerate it. I feel like screaming and yelling. I'm not going to do it. I don't like the fact that I get angry. I'm going to control it. Even if I do get angry, I'm going to still continue. I'm not going to allow this to stop me. We have to have that attitude. Even if we have a horrible day, the next morning when we get up to chant our rounds, we can't think, I had such a horrible day yesterday. I did so many stupid things. I was in such maya. Why even bother to chant? Can't think that way. Or we can't think, oh, my chanting is going to be horrible because yesterday was so bad. No. Every morning we have to think, today is the day to chant my best rounds. We can't allow anything to stop us. If we do, we'll be finished because there's so many things that are going to stop us because we're conditioned souls. Right? We're not pure yet. We're becoming pure. Someday we will be pure. We won't be fighting these things anymore. But until we're pure, we have to fight them. We just have to accept that's how it is. Don't become discouraged. It's just how it is. We have the stage of anartha nivritti. So that means before anartha nivritti, what's the stage? Anartha. Because you can't get to anartha nivritti unless you had anarthas to nivritti. Right? So we accept that. There's a beautiful prayer in the Bhagavatam where the devotee is praying, "My dear Lord, if it's by your will or arrangement that all these material desires exist within my heart, I will accept that. But I will never give up my determination to serve you." So he's acknowledging and accepting his conditioned state. "I'll accept that due to my past actions that I have these samskaras, these desires, but still I will never give up my service to you." So that means the devotee is saying his determination for Krishna consciousness is distinct from his situation in the modes of nature. No matter what is impeding him internally, he still can separate his desire and intention to serve Krishna from that. Isn't that wonderful? Otherwise, we surrender to him. You think, "Oh, what's the use? I'm so fallen." Right? Very important. Prabhupada wrote in the letter, "If we lose our enthusiasm, everything is finished." So this is a really good way to lose your enthusiasm. A really good way to get discouraged by your material desires or material contamination. Yes? Oh, how is it we have anarthas and so much enthusiasm? Because that's the process of Krishna consciousness. By taking shelter of the process and magnifying our desire to serve Krishna, then we get that energy, we get that enthusiasm. But the anarthas, they don't go away like that. So often we're transcending them by bhakti, we're transcending them. They're still there, they haven't been fully uprooted, and we're transcending them, we're not being affected by them. But our bhakti tends to be unsteady until all the anarthas are gone, because you may be doing good for a while, and then the anartha hits. So, as Prabhupada said, you're in the boat, and you're in a rough sea, but at least you're in a boat. So the boat is bhakti. And bhakti is stronger than your material desire, and that's why you can be enthusiastic in Krishna consciousness, because the process is more powerful than your conditioning. Just think, no matter how bad our material conditioning is or desires are, we have the holy name, we can call out and take shelter and get purified. So, in the process of being purified, we have to go through the impurity. That's just the reality. We have to accept that. So don't give up your effort, no matter how fallen you are. Because when you give up your effort, at that point, you lost. That's it. It's over. As we say in America, you're a loser. At that point, you become a loser. Is that clear?
Yeah.
Okay, we go to the bottom of the page. It says the central role of japa in bhakti. Prabhupada, Satchinandan Swami quotes Prabhupada as saying that 90% of our advancement is dependent on chanting. All other processes of bhakti are contained in chanting. Chanting is the most important of the 9 processes. Chanting is the pole that supports the other processes of bhakti. The goal is to always remember Krishna. The best way to do this is by chanting. Your beads are your connection to Krishna. Srila Prabhupada said that. Your beads are your ticket back to Godhead. Srila Prabhupada said that. chanting is the essence of our philosophy. Srila Prabhupada said that also. So I think we made it clear earlier this morning how important chanting is, that we have no Hare Krishna movement, and we have no spiritual life without the Hare Krishna mantra. And we have to make sure every morning we're actually chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, that we're members of the Hare Krishna movement, not members of the no Hare Krishna movement, or the blank. One of Prabhupada's godbrothers said, if you're chanting Aparad, it's like a blank bullet. Makes a sound, but there's no bullet. So you don't want to be members, we don't want to be members of the blank Hare Krishnas. We want to be members of the Hare Krishnas. Right? Okay, appreciation. Go to the back page. What you appreciate, appreciates. And we don't have time for this exercise, but sometime, if you'd like to do this exercise, the exercise is the holy name is my, and you fill in the blank. What is the holy name to you? Your guru, your teacher, your friend. And then you finish the sentence, because. The holy name is my friend because he goes with me wherever I travel. The holy name is my teacher because he guides me. The holy name is my psychiatrist because he keeps me sane in this crazy world. That was from one of our workshops. The holy name is my doctor because he cures the disease of birth and death. So like that. Appreciation of the holy name is very powerful. It's when you're having a bad japa day and you can't get yourself up and going, appreciation is maybe the one thing that will save you. Just appreciate, what does the holy name mean to you? What has it meant in your life? Very powerful meditation. And meditate what your life would be like without the holy name. You know, we take things for granted, right? What's that saying? You take things for granted until what? They leave you? Is there a saying like that? Separation makes the heart grow fonder. So if you had no holy name, then you realize how important it is. Okay. We did the meaning of the mantra. If I surrender to Krishna, what if? So we don't have time to do this, but I'll explain this to you. I think we did this last time. And we had talked about earlier about how we have this hatred towards Krishna in us, this envy. And it comes up a lot in our resistance to give ourselves fully to the chanting. Because if we give ourselves fully to the chanting, we start to think, maybe I'll become more surrendered than I'm ready to be. You ever think like that? If I really get into my japa, I might like become a religious fanatic. I may want to like move in the temple and shave my head or leave my wife, or maybe Krishna will drop bombs in my apartment that, you know, could ruin my life. Something dawns on us when we start to chant well, that this Hare Krishna mantra is really powerful, and if I keep doing this, I'm going to like start surrendering, maybe more than I think I'm ready to surrender. A lot of devotees think this way. I think every devotee thinks this way practically. And so what happens is, subconsciously we monitor our chanting to make sure we don't chant that well that we surrender more than we think we're capable of handling. Isn't that weird? But that's what we do. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna. Man, this is working. Uh-oh, slow it down. Too ego, too fast, too soon. I don't know if you can handle this. You know? So it's important to be aware of this, and be aware, as we said earlier, that we are our own greatest obstacle, not Krishna. So we're thinking, well, if I surrender to Krishna, he'll create obstacles for me that I can't handle. But Krishna will not do that. Our problem is us. It's not Krishna. Our problem is not surrendering too much to Krishna. Our problem is not surrendering enough. Our problem is not Krishna's going to make our life difficult. Our problem is we are making our lives difficult. So we need to break through this resistance and fear that Krishna's going to do something to make our life difficult, when the reality is we are doing the things that make our life difficult, not Krishna. Krishna is only helping us. And we have to overcome the concept of surrender as something mindless or something horrible. Surrender means coming closer to Krishna, however that's possible. Think of it in terms of coming closer. Don't think of it in terms of Krishna disturbing your life and world, taking things away from you. Just think of coming closer. And so, when you chant, be willing to open up enough to overcome those fears so that you can give yourself to chanting. And so you won't subconsciously monitor your chanting to make sure you don't get too Krishna conscious too fast. Man, those 8 rounds are really good. I'm going to chant some bad rounds the next 8 just to make sure I don't surrender too fast too soon. Is that a good idea? Because when you start chanting good rounds, you'll realize if I keep doing this every day, things are going to change. And don't be afraid of how they're going to change. They're going to be better. Okay. Then we come to aligning your life with the Holy Name. And we must act outside of our 16 rounds for our 16 rounds. Everything we do affects our heart. Our relationship with others affects our chanting. Resolve any bad relationships. Okay, so this exercise we're going to do, you know, find something in your life that you think is detrimental to your Krishna consciousness. But I think this, let me see if this exercise, we can do this later. Keep this in mind. We'll do this later. But I want to talk about this first. One of the realizations I had is that one week I was in association with a devotee, and I was traveling, and this devotee was there. And I had a little issue in my mind with this devotee about certain things he does. And I realized that week, my chanting, no matter what I did, was hitting a wall. I couldn't get past a certain wall. I'd do everything I could to chant well, get absorbed, turn my life off, but I was hitting a wall. It was just like, it wasn't happening. You know? It's like a boy meets a girl and there's no chemistry. You know, Kamala, why don't you marry, Anand here? And he's like, nothing happens. You know? But he's really good, you know, he's really smart and he's got a good family. And you're like trying to make it happen, but there's no chemistry. It's just, I don't feel anything. So it was like that. You ever been, you're chanting sometimes? And it's like, there's nothing you can do. And I realized at that point it was because of how I was thinking about this devotee. That was the problem. It wasn't that I wasn't chanting properly or anything. And at that point, I had to resolve in my mind the issues I had with him, get over them. And when I did, the wall dissolved, and I could chant. So I think it's important for all of us right now to think about any bad relationships we may have, even if they only exist within our consciousness. The relationship externally may be perfectly fine and okay, but if internally we're not right with someone or something, we really need to resolve it within our own consciousness. So that when we associate or when we think of that person, we may not agree exactly with what they say or do, but we have no ill feelings towards them. We may have concerns, but no ill feelings. It's very important. Otherwise, that's a block for your chakra because it's an offense to the Holy Name, isn't it? Our relationships with other devotees affect our relationship with Krishna, right? Sometimes you can define your relationship with Krishna by how you define your relationship with other devotees. You can't say, I'll have a good relationship with Krishna and a bad relationship with devotees. Now, I have to tell you something very important. How many of you were last Sunday at the class I gave at the Nisringa Temple? How many of you were there? I said something important, so most of you weren't there, so I'll say it again. A Vaishnava, one who is a Vaishnava, does not find fault with other devotees. Do we have any Vaishnavas in this room today? Do we have any Vaishnavas out on the internet? A Vaishnava is one who does not find fault with other devotees. How do we understand that? How do we know that's true? I was in Los Angeles when Prabhupada said, if you are envious, you are in the material world. If you're not envious, you're in the spiritual world. If you're jealous, you're in the material world. If you're not jealous, you're in the spiritual world. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would not allow his disciples to find fault with other devotees, no matter what the fault was. He wouldn't allow them to express it. He would only say, tell me something good about that devotee. He was exemplifying this principle that Vaishnavas do not find fault. You know that song and the book that Jatin Thakur Maharaj wrote, what kind of Vaishnava am I? Am I the kind that finds fault? Well, if I'm the kind that finds fault, technically I'm not a Vaishnava. Now, I will tell you a story which you will find very interesting. Is everybody awake? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, no Vaishnava can become a guru. It's not possible. And the reason it's not possible is because the guru has to find faults with the disciples. And he said, a Vaishnava does not find fault. I have devotees who want to become disciples, and they tell me, please find fault with me. They write me letters, emails, and say, please find fault with me. Point and said, if you ever see anything wrong, tell me. They're like waiting. And it's not my nature to find fault. That's why they ask me, because I never do it. I rarely do it. So they, Guru Maharaj, find some faults. You must see some faults. So Bhaktisiddhanta said, he said, you can't be a guru because Vaishnavas don't find fault. So now what do? No gurus. He said, so how do we adjust that? He said, well, the problem is if we don't have gurus, the disciplic succession does not continue. So we have to have gurus. So he said that the guru, his position is that he sees himself as the servant of his disciple. And his service is to train them in Krishna consciousness. So if he's in that consciousness, then he can execute the function of guru and still remain a Vaishnava, because he's in the consciousness of training. So now I will tell you a story which is amazing. I love this story. One of my favorite all-time stories. I may have either told you, but I will tell you again. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had a disciple, and the disciple was finding fault with another devotee. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, he said, you know, I am guru. And you know that the guru has the thankless task of finding faults in his disciples. You know that no Vaishnava finds fault. No Vaishnava wants to find fault. And I have to do that. That's my service. It's a thankless task. And you don't have to do it. And you're doing it. Why in the world would you want to do it? I'm cursed to do it, and you aren't, and you're doing it. Interesting, isn't it? Now, it is my experience that we could hear 1,008 classes on why we shouldn't find fault, and 3 days later we'll be on the phone. You know what so-and-so did? I can't believe it. That was so stupid. Why did they do that? Isn't it? How many classes have we heard on not finding fault? How many shlokas have we read? A lot, right? Do we still find fault? Why do we do it? That's the big question, because we have to stop it. And I would suggest we stop it like right now and end it for the rest of our life if we want to advance in Krishna consciousness. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explained why we do it. He said, because we're not humble. That's it. Plain and simple. It's a lack of humility. He said, I have no humility, not one drop. And that is why I find fault. Now, isn't it interesting that when we find fault, we usually do it because we think we're smart. Because smart people can see what's going on. Smart people can find out what's wrong in a situation or a person and point it out. So when we find a fault, we often think, it's because I'm intelligent. I see the fault. I'm smart. It's because I have high standards. I can see this is below my standards. That's why I see it, because I'm cultured. I'm classy. I'm educated. That's why I see the fault. That's not why Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said we see the fault. He said we see it because we lack. He said, I see it because of the utter absence of even a drop of humility. That's the reason. Now, we should acknowledge that. And we should also acknowledge a very important point, that the antidote, or what counteracts the tendency to fault find, is the tendency for appreciation of another devotee. Then you say, yeah, but some devotees, I don't see anything worth appreciating. There's nothing to appreciate. They just come to the temple and eat prasad and they go home. Their clothes are dirty, they haven't shaved, you know. I hear them chanting, there's nothing to appreciate. Would you like to hear another story? I told this last week. Amazing story. One devotee was complaining to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, so-and-so Prabhu is not chanting his rounds. And so-and-so Prabhu was an important member of the mat, and he's not chanting his rounds. Pretty serious, right? You finally find out that so-and-so, respected so-and-so, is not chanting his rounds. This is serious. Call the GBC. Kick this guy out of here. He's in the temple, he's doing all this service, and he's not chanting his rounds. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta shifted the paradigm. He told the disciple, this devotee that is not chanting his rounds is engaged fully in Krishna consciousness. He has so much bhakti that he can be enthusiastically and fully engaged in devotional service, even though he's not chanting any rounds. If I were not chanting my rounds, I could never do that. He's so advanced. Would you think like that? If you saw someone not chanting their rounds, would you think like that? I don't think so. I don't think we would think like that. We would be on the phone talking to the temple president, telling our neighbors. So-and-so, we'd be on the internet, so-and-so doesn't chant his rounds. Send this to all your friends. So you understand, we're looking at things from a certain point of view. And that point of view can be very dangerous for us, very detrimental. For us individually and as an organization. So this is really important. If we want to improve our chanting, we should begin today, from now, to change the way we deal with one another and see one another to something in which we can appreciate. What can I appreciate? It seemed there was nothing to appreciate in this devotee. He had stopped chanting. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta found something amazing to appreciate and to denigrate himself and appreciate the other devotee. Amazing, isn't it? Prabhus and Matajis, do you realize that we could not execute devotional service if there were no devotees in ISKCON? Do you realize even the devotees you criticize, you require to maintain your bhakti? Without them, you couldn't do it. Even the Nish Nish Ram Ram Adi Adi devotees, at least they're in the temple and it looks like they're chanting, so you can chant with them. We require all the devotees, every devotee. And actually every devotee has some quality that can inspire us if we care to look for it. I'll tell you a funny story. This is so funny. I grew up in Los Angeles. I was born in Los Angeles. I took 3 births in Los Angeles. My body, my first initiation, and my second. And so I've been around the Los Angeles temple since 1969. And at some point in this temple, this elderly man started coming to the temple. He didn't ever talk to anybody. He would just come, sit in the back of the temple. You'd see him there. You know, for a few hours in the morning and evening, you'd see him there, right? So I lived in Los Angeles, but I also lived in other temples. And periodically, I would come back and live in Los Angeles, right? And it's maybe not like this in India, but in the West, if you go away from a temple for 3 or 4 years and you come back, 90% of the devotees are gone, and they're all new faces. Because so many people leave, come to Krishna consciousness in the West, and they just leave. And they merge back in the material world, because it's not part of their culture. And so many, there's so many transient people, so devotees are shifting, moving around. So you come back to a temple 3, 4, 5 years later, there's a whole new crowd. And you come back 3, 4, 5 years later, there's a whole new... So I came back to the Los Angeles temple about 5 times in 20, 30 years. And there's all these new faces, and this one guy, he doesn't chant japa, he sits in the back of the temple and chews a toothpick. And he doesn't talk to anybody. Everyone's coming and going, and he's still there. The same guy 30 years later. You know? So nothing to appreciate other than the fact that he's still there, right? And then I get inspired about his, because of his steadiness, right? It's really funny. Now how many devotees come and go, and he didn't. So there's always something to appreciate about another devotee, right? And if you verbalize that appreciation, it helps you, it's purifying for you, and it helps them because it encourages them. Prabhu, I really appreciate how you fix the temple, or how you dress the deities, or your prasadam, or how you organize this, or that festival, whatever. Just a little word. Devotee really motivates the devotee. The devotee feels satisfied and inspired. But the person who glorifies makes even more, gets more benefit, more advancement. You know the verse in Bhagavad Gita, Apichet Sudara Chodo. It said, if a devotee commits an abominable action, you consider him a sadhu because he's engaged in devotional service. There's a long purport by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. It basically says Krishna's orders you to see this way. You disobey Krishna's order if you don't see this way. It's an amazing purport. And it says, but what if he ran off with another's wife? And what if he did this and that? Krishna says, I order you to see him as a sadhu if his heart and soul are engaged in devotional service. And Vishwanath Chakravarti says, because when a devotee does that, he feels remorse and guilt and he rectifies himself. So that's what happens. Many times we're finding fault with a devotee, and the devotee himself is feeling bad about his own fault, and you don't know it. And he's remorseful for the fault, and he's feeling helpless. I can't control myself, this is what I'm doing. And you're finding fault and becoming upset, and he himself is feeling that way. The amazing thing about is the next verse. The next verse says, very soon he becomes dharmatma, righteous. Very soon he becomes righteous and attains everlasting peace. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his commentary says, who becomes righteous? It seems like it's referring to this devotee. And you can say, yes, this verse refers to this devotee. He committed an abominable action, but he's situated in devotional service. Very soon he becomes righteous. Bhaktivinoda says, the devotee who sees the other devotee who committed the abominable action as a sadhu, saintly person, he becomes righteous by that vision. He's the one who very soon becomes righteous. Isn't that interesting? So we are ordered to see all devotees as sadhus, and that's how we become righteous. That's how we advance. Now here, I'll give you a really nice picture. Imagine this picture. Every devotee likes to be encouraged, correct? But we are told that the practice of humility means to not want to be acknowledged for what we do. So now we have a problem. Everyone wants to be encouraged, but it's wrong to be looking for appreciation. Right? How do we solve the problem? It's so simple. We stop finding fault, and we all appreciate one another. If we all appreciate one another, we get the benefit of appreciating others, so we make advancement, and they get the benefit of being appreciated, because everybody wants to be appreciated. And when we're appreciated, we get all enthusiastic. Oh, they noticed what I did. It was worth it. Somebody noticed. This is our human nature. I've done services, I've made sacrifices, and one senior devotee would say, thank you for doing that. And that was all I needed to hear. I just one thank you. So, oh, that was like the best thing I heard all day, all week, all month. That one thank you. It means a lot, doesn't it? To keep us enthusiastic, to keep us engaged. One thank you, one word of appreciation means a lot to a devotee. I've done services where I've sacrificed myself, huge sacrifices. I never got a thank you. It hurt. It really hurt. Of course, I should not expect it, and I should be transcendental. But I'm not always transcendental. So we create an organization where people realize this is Vaishnavism. Vaishnavism means we appreciate. If I'm a Vaishnava, I do not criticize. If I'm an authority, I may have to criticize, that may be my service, but in general relationships, no. So everyone gets appreciated, and everyone gets to appreciate. One big happy family. And what does that do to our japa? It helps our japa, doesn't it? So please realize that a Vaishnava does not criticize. Please realize it's a deficiency, it's a personal deficiency, a personal defect that is extremely damaging to your own spiritual life. and that appreciation is extremely valuable for you as a sadhaka, for the person you appreciate, and for our organization in general. And this will attract people to Krishna consciousness. Some of us are highly conditioned to criticize, so conditioned we don't even know we're doing it. It's so second nature, we don't even realize it. Become more conscious, become more aware. Are you appreciating others, or are you criticizing others? It's very, very important for our bhakti. Okay. Now I have to show you, on the back of this, on the back of the japa affirmations, I'm giving you a homework assignment. Because I don't want to do it now, because we have, this can take up to an hour. So I want to explain the homework assignment. I'll read the questions. This is just to kind of solidify everything you learned this weekend and keep it in your japa book. So the first question is, what realizations or gems did you discover in this workshop that you wish to take with you? So, if you like, you can answer these questions on a separate piece of paper and then transfer your answer here. And you have a couple points that just you felt really helped you. Maybe this one point about the romantic sacred time. Oh, that's it. That's all I needed to hear. Or the pushing the button on. Or the opening of the heart. Whatever it is, you write those things that are of value to you, that you realize that in the future of your life, in the future of your life, when you're chanting, these realizations will be very important for you. Question two, what practices did you learn in this workshop that you wish to implement in your daily japa? So there may be certain things, certain attitudes that you feel are important, and you want to do this every day, and this is just a reminder. Right? Number three, what detrimental practices and habits do you wish to eliminate from your japa? So in this exercise, you want to look at like one or two things that you feel are your big obstacles to improving your japa. What is, you know, maybe it's getting up late, or maybe it's, you know, whatever it is, there's something you realize, this is an obstacle for my japa. And I really need to deal with it. So this is to bring your awareness to, you write it down, and it kind of reminds you, this is what I'm dealing with. This is what is always getting in the way of good japa. It could be something internal that I don't turn my life on. Whatever it is. Okay, number four, what are the main obstacles you believe you will face while attempting to improve your japa and how you deal with them? So, let me go back to the last question, because the last question, what detrimental practices, then include this other exercise, anything you're doing in your life that you find detrimental. So one thing, as we just discussed, fault finding could be an example, something you're doing where you're not chanting, or staying up late, or whatever it is. You're being too busy, you're taking on too many projects. Whatever it is, find one or two things in your life that you see as obstacles. And you're just doing this to be aware, to bring your awareness that these are the problems that I need to deal with. Okay, number four, what are the main obstacles you believe you will face while attempting to improve your japa, and how will you deal with them? In other words, you've decided what you want to do, how you want to think, what the obstacles are, and now you're being asked, what do you think the challenges will be in doing this? So you start looking and say, well, the challenge is I work 12 hours a day. So the challenge will be getting to bed early enough, to get up early enough to chant. Something like that, you know. You realize the challenge, or I'm studying for exams now, this, that, the next thing. And so then you look at the challenges and then you write it, how am I going to deal with it? The last question. What are your main japa goals for the immediate future, and what are your long-range japa goals? So now you want to start looking towards the future, towards improvement. Obviously, your japa goals are not to leave here and say, it was good, but. Right? your goals are to increase and improve. Tangible, what is it? What are you looking for? I want to gain a greater taste in the next few months. I want to chant 20 rounds. I want to practice being absorbed, turning my life off. Something tangible that you really want to focus on. And then long-range goals. Over, you know, where do I want to see myself 5 years from now in my japa? In terms of realization, in terms of execution, in terms of taste, in terms of experience, whatever it is. It's not bad to think, I would like to experience the Holy Name in a certain way in the future. It's not bad to think like that. 5 years from now, I would like to be, when I chant, I would like to be absorbed in Krishna Lila, naturally, spontaneously, something, whatever. You know, it doesn't have to be realistic, it's just something you want to look forward to. So it keeps you moving towards your goal. Okay? Is that good? Okay, now, I want everyone to find somebody who can be a buddy for them. And a buddy means some friend that you're going to call every day for a while, and I'll explain why. So move around the room and find somebody. You may know them or not, but find somebody who's going to be your japa buddy. And I'm going to tell you what we're going to do. So everybody needs a japa buddy. So if you have a close friend in the room, just hook up with them now. You have to move around and find your japa buddy, unless you're happy to have a japa buddy who's already sitting next to you. But everybody needs a buddy, okay? You don't even have to live in Bangalore to do this. Just have to live in India and have a telephone. Please find your japa buddy. Everybody needs a buddy. If you don't have a buddy, raise your hand, what buddy you are. I would like you to, once you find your japa buddy, write their name and phone number down on your little, on your booklet, okay? Write the name and phone number down of your japa buddy. Who doesn't have a buddy? Raise your hand. Who's afraid to have a buddy? Raise your hand. Keep your hand raised. If you don't have a buddy, who else doesn't have a buddy? Over here. Your buddy's over here. Go sit next to him, okay? Everyone has to be sitting with their buddy. They can't decide who's going to sit next to your buddy. Write their phone number down. Okay. Do you all have notebooks? Anybody? Who does not have a notebook? You all have notebooks. Okay. You don't have? You can borrow some paper. Okay. Prabhuji's. This is what we're going to do. This is how japa buddies works. The reason you have a japa buddy is because you're obviously want to improve your japa, and obviously you want to do some things. You're going to do some things because you've learned some things. And the things you want to do, you want to tell your japa buddy. So this is how it works. I'll give you an example. Let's say, after coming to this workshop, I decide, I want to rise every day by 4, start chanting at 4:30, and finish my rounds by 6:30 every day. That's one of the things I want to do. And when I chant, I want to be completely absorbed. I want to turn my life off, and I want to chant in my temple room for 16 rounds. Those are two of my goals. And I want to Read something every day from my japa book, from my notes, okay? So those are three things. So I would tell those three things to my japa buddy. Actually, I would write them down in my notebook, rip out the page, and give them to my japa buddy. And my japa buddy would do the same thing for me. And so we would set a time every day that we're going to call one another. So I give him the page, he knows what I want to do. And he calls me, he says, Mahatma Prabhu, ask me three questions. Did you get up at 4:30? Did you finish your rounds by 6:30? Were you in your Krishna house, sacred place, and did you read something from your book? That's all he's going to ask me. He's going to ask me three questions, and I'm going to say yes or no to any of those three questions. Then I'm going to ask his three questions. And he's going to tell me what he wanted. So the point is, if you want to talk about it beyond that, you can. But the main thing is you can do it as simple as a 20-second phone call. Did you get up at 4:30? No. Did you get your rounds in by 6:30? No. Did you read something from your book? Yeah, I did that. Okay. And then you ask the three questions. Okay, we'll call you tomorrow at 7. Why do we do this? Because you're creating accountability with another person. So you make the determination, but now you know when the alarm goes off at 4, tonight at 7, you're either going to get to say yes or no to your japa buddy when he asks you, did you start chanting at 4:30? So perhaps by 4 o'clock, you'll be thinking of your japa buddy, and you think, I want to tell him yes. Now, this is an example of how it works. You can adjust how you want it to work. You can have a discussion. You say, you could tell your japa buddy, if I say no, then the next question to ask me is, how are you going to deal with it tomorrow? You say, you know, then I'll say, this is what I'm going to do tomorrow. Or this is what I'm going to do tonight. To be able to do it tomorrow. You can have your japa buddy ask you anything you want. Do you think it's a good idea? How many of you are afraid to do that? Because you already know the answer to your question is going to be no. At least ask one question you can say yes. Did you get up before 9 in the morning? Well, I almost did. So right now what I'd like you to do is write down the questions you want, or write down the things you want to do. And then your japa, and give that to your japa buddy. So take 5 minutes, write down the things you want to do, tear out the paper, and give that to your japa buddy. And then after we do this exercise, we'll continue, we'll finish this workshop. Is there any questions on that, or what to do? Yeah. What? Daily. In the beginning, make it daily. You can decide later. And you can amend and you can add to this more things. Prabhus, if we don't start it, we have to do whatever is necessary to improve our japa, right? We have to make it better. And this will help you. Don't be afraid. The more you resist, the more it means you need it. Right? Okay, so write down what your intentions are to improve your japa and then give that to your japa buddy.